Hi, everybody. I'm Anne, a very grateful compulsive eater, relapse survivor, 100-pounder, abstinent one day at a time by the grace of God, and thanks to all of you. Boy, that's a lot to say just to introduce myself, but all of those things are important to who I am and part of my story. I pray that relapse doesn't have to be part of your story, but unfortunately, or fortunately, it is part of mine. So just to give you a little bit of background, I came into program on March 19th, 2007. So I just celebrated 17 years in recovery. And I stay in recovery despite the relapse that I'll probably touch on in a little while, because despite the relapse, I never went back to who I was. I used to live in hell. Before program, I lived in hell. Relapse was like purgatory. And recovery is heaven. So when I first came in, my life was spiraling out of control on every level. Unfortunately, 17 years ago, the only way I knew how to handle chaos was to eat. And I was a very, very good dieter. I dieted. I lost 100 pounds twice, 90 pounds three times. I like to say I dieted myself up to 337 pounds is my highest recorded weight. And I say highest recorded because who knows? I only got on a scale when the doctor forced me to. So I went to my first OA meeting very reluctantly. I had gone to mental health because I was sure. I have a mentally ill daughter. I did then, I do now. She's still mentally ill. That doesn't go away. But mentally ill daughter, sick husband, sick mother, worked for the New York City Department of Education. There was no way I could turn in my life that I had any reprieve. Food, I thought, was my only solace. So I went to a mental health therapist because I thought, sure, they were preparing, you know, the bed next to my daughter in the mental hospital for me. And of course, being a good therapist, she sent me to a psychiatrist who have most of them have very little information on food disorders and compulsive eating. And he said, well, why are you here? And the answer is really because the therapist told me I had to. But I said, because I need to get my eating under control, because when my eating's under control, my life will be under control. I didn't realize at that point that I had it totally backwards. I need to get my life under control. And then the eating and all my other isms fall into place. And this guy who hadn't seen me more than 5 minutes said to me, diets don't work, have surgery. Now, the addict in me right away goes, ooh, surgery, the magic wand. The intelligent person, logical person in me said, are you kidding me? You could take out my stomach, grind it up, use it to fertilize the flowers, and I would still eat because my eating has nothing to do with my stomach. It's all in my head. And even now, sometimes, I don't know what hunger is. Sometimes I'll think I'm hungry, but I do this exercise where I go, stomach, are you hungry? I actually talk to my stomach. I'm a little weird, but you know, it helps me. And usually stomach goes, no, I'm good. Or sometimes it goes, for God's sake, woman, don't put another thing in me. But if I say, head, are you hungry? It's like a little rabid dog. Hey, yeah. Feed me. If stomach says I'm hungry, then I'm legitimately hungry, and maybe I need to adjust, you know, my meal time or whatever. If head's hungry, there's not enough food on the face of the earth to satisfy that hunger. And I never knew that because I could, when I was under a lot of stress, I would eat until I was so sick that all I could do was lay down until the pain went away. And get up and eat some more. Like I said, that was living in hell. They said this is a disease of isolation. If you came and knocked on my door, I would tiptoe out of my bed because I was probably laying in bed with all kinds of goodies around me. I would tiptoe, open the little peephole, look out to see who's there, see you, and go, nope, shut the peephole, and tiptoe back to my bed. That's no way to live. That's not living. That's the hell that I lived in. I was not suicidal, but if someone said to me, you're going to die, I would say, okay. I could think of a lot of worse things at that point. So anyway, doctor sent me back to the therapist who said, go to OA. Unfortunately, I've had a bad experience with OA. It happens because at every meeting we run into other addicts, other sick people, and they don't always do the right thing. And a friend and I went to this meeting because they offered free babysitting, and we both had very young children at the time. So we went, and at the end of the meeting, we put in our dollar or whatever, and they ran after us and told us that we didn't give enough money. And we were mortified and swore we'd never go back. And it took 30 years. It took 30 years and a...
Amen.
It took 30 years and a therapist twisting my arm to get me back into OA. So when I went into that first room, it was with the intention of going, hating it, and telling the therapist, I told you so. I chose my meeting in a way I don't suggest people do, but I'm sure God chose the meeting for me. Because I went through the meeting list Saturday morning, nope, I'm sleeping. Sunday morning, sleeping. Wednesday night, 8 o'clock, oh, man, I get up at 5 in the morning. I can't do this. Then I saw one. Monday night, 6 o'clock. Okay. At least I'll get home at a decent hour. Now, like I said, I don't suggest you pick it that way. But I walked into what was probably the ugliest room in OA. Imagine baby diarrhea, green walls, old, ratty, rusty folding metal chairs, and a rickety desk up in the front. Not exactly the place you want to be, but this lady came up to me, and she goes, hi, are you new? And I go, uh-huh, and she gave me a hug. And I tell you, that hug given to me by Mary B. on March 19th, 2004, saved my life both figuratively and literally, because I seriously don't believe that I would still be alive, because I was on all kinds of medication for high blood pressure and this and that, and my weight was just going up and up. So they said to me at the end of that meeting, you have to they said, we're having a business meeting, do you want to stay? And I don't know what they were talking about, but was such a nice feeling in that room, despite it being ugly, that I said, okay. Then they said, we're having an anniversary meeting. And they were also cheerful. It was disgusting. Like, how can these people be so freaking cheerful? And they said, we're having an anniversary meeting. Do you want to help? Okay. Would you like to bring... I used to say my first service, but my first service, and you're all doing service right now, whether you realize it or not, showing up on this meeting is service. Every one of you is doing service to me. Every one of you. So thank you for your service. So my first service was walking in that door. My second service was to bring that a little baggie of Splenda to a anniversary meeting. It also made me go back the next week because I had made a commitment. That's what they say, service is slimming, because it keeps you coming back. And then they said, yeah, you got to be abstinent. Well, what does that mean? And they don't really, you know, nobody really tells you that. They don't really explain it. And basically, you get to choose your own. I said, okay. Now, remember, I still didn't, even though it was really nice people, I really didn't want to be there because I had that bad experience. I said, okay, three meals, two snacks, and anything goes. Well, the scary thing is, I started losing weight by just cutting down from eating 24/7 to eating five times a day. So I started to think, well, maybe there's something in this. So I started getting into it, and I looked for a sponsor, and yeah, sometimes they can be difficult to find. So I said, no, I can't just do nothing. I got to do the steps. They tell you, you got to do the steps. I didn't really know what they were talking about. So I bought the 12 and 12, and they bought the 12 and 12 workbook, and I started doing the steps on my own. And then I got a sponsor, and she took me through the first three steps. And by the time we'd finished the first three steps, I had already started my fourth step with the through the workbook. And in some areas, they have a step-up ceremony. It's a beautiful ceremony where both the sponsor and sponsee recommit to first three steps of the program and living the 12-step lifestyle. It is a beautiful ceremony. And at the end of that ceremony, I asked her if she would take my fifth step. Now, all I'm going to say about that is, honestly, my first fourth step was probably about as half-assed as you can get. Because I did it by myself. I didn't have a sponsor. I didn't have somebody leading me. It's just what I could discern from the 12 and 12 and the big book. But, you know, that was all very gobbledygook. But I did the best I could. But guess what? The only way you can do it wrong, and this is the one that scares everybody. I don't want to do the fourth step. It's too scary. And then the fifth step. I've had the privilege of taking many fifth steps. It's never, no matter what people told me, never made me feel less about them. Actually, if anything, it made me feel more that they trusted me enough to tell me their deepest, darkest secrets. And continued to work the steps, spoke to my sponsor. In the beginning, I spoke 5 days a week. We did not speak on the weekends. And it was working. And I lost a lot of weight. Like I said, I am a 100-pounder. But I continue to work the steps. I do, and I continue to use the workbook. I love the 12 and 12 workbook. The questions in it don't change, but I do. So every year the answers are different. Now, some of them are the same. I mean, your step one asks you for the history of your eating. That doesn't change unless, you know, I've done something stupid and tried some, the newest, latest fab diet. Like, yeah, diets don't work. They all work and none of them work. Because it's not about my stomach. It's about my head. It's about my soul. So every day, not even every day, I have to take steps one, two, and three. I have to say every day that I am a compulsive overeater. I am. In recovery one day at a time, yes, but I am still and always will be a compulsive eater. That will always be my knee-jerk reaction, but I don't have to act on it anymore. Now, I'm going to skip a minute back to step 12, because step 12 is all about service. And as I said, we're all doing service right now. But a lot of times people forget the second half of step. The first half is having had a spiritual awakening, which if you really work these steps, you will. It may not be a lightning bolt experience, but it changes you. We're going to have that. We tried to carry the message to other people. That's the service. But the part people tend to forget, and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Practice what principles? What are we talking about? Oh, excuse me, the principles. They're very important because they kind of tell us, they kind of break the step down to one word. So step one, the principle, excuse me, I take a drink. Sorry about that. So step one, we have to admit it. We have to be honest enough with ourselves to say, food has me by the throat, and my life is unmanageable because of it, in one way or another. So honesty, this is a program of rigorous honesty. Once we know that, then we have to come to step two, And understand there's got to be something stronger. 5 minute
gentle reminder.
Dang, that time goes so fast. Step two tells us that we have to believe that something out there can restore us to sanity. Now, some people don't like, what do you mean restore me to sanity? I knew I was crazy, so that was easy for me. The spiritual principle is hope. And I always say that is the greatest gift I was given at my second meeting, was the gift of hope. And it's what I always try to pass on to other people. And step three is faith. And we make that decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood them. But making the decision is not enough. We have to take action on it. You know, we can't just sit there and expect, I'm suddenly just not going to want to eat anymore. No, I have to, you know, plan meals. I have to eat the appropriate food at the appropriate times and the appropriate amounts. I have to go to meetings. I have to do all the stuff involved in working the program. So 1, 2, 3, I can't, God can. I think I'll let God. That's honesty, hope, faith. And then we go through the rest of the principles, because I'm running out of time. I'm not going to go through all of them, but all of the steps. But step four is courage. We have to be courageous in our honesty and face stuff that we may not want to face. Integrity. Despite, this is who I am. All the rotten stuff in my life has made me. And I can share that with another person, and guess what? They'll still care for me. Willingness. I've got to be willing to go to any length. Humility. Now, some people, you know, as they say, confuse humility with humiliation. Oh, to me, humility means there is a God, but it's not me. Self-discipline. You know, nobody's going to come and cook my meals for me. Oh, how I wish. But it's not going to happen. Love. I have to love my neighbor. I have to love my fellows. I have to love the guy who hit me and seriously hurt me 6 months ago the same way God loves me. Step 10 is perseverance. I got to do this every day, over and over and over and over again, every day. Step 11 is spiritual awareness. We have to really work on our conscious contact with God. And, you know, some people.
2 minute gentle reminder.
Thank you. Some people have trouble with the word God because of, you know, their upbringing or whatever. It doesn't matter. You can be an atheist and have success in this problem, because the program itself, the principles, these all things that can be your higher power. You just have to find a way to let go of the outside world and let that higher self, that inner, whatever you understand your higher to be, speak to you. And, you know, I know for me, sometimes I have to say, okay, God, and that's the name I give my higher power. I'm having trouble hearing your wee still voice. Can you please use your sledgehammer on me? And, you know, and he has. You'd be surprised some of the ways he speaks to me. One of my favorite is when I'm speaking to a sponsee and I'll hear words coming out of my mouth that I know without a doubt is God telling me what I should be doing. You know, practice what you preach. So step 11 is that spiritual awareness. And step 12 is service. We can't keep what we don't give away. We have to program will give us a life, but we won't keep it if we don't give back. So that's my story. As I said, I'm 100 pounds. I didn't mention my relapse, but I will say that my relapse came from complacency. When I lived in the land of denial for a while, and then when I realized that I hadn't done any step work in like 6 months, that's when I knew. Fool, you're not just struggling, you're in relapse. Get it together. But since I had never stopped I did not gain, thank God, all my weight back. I never went back to some of my horrible, most horrible things. And recovery lies in the steps. I say it every time I qualify. Recovery lies in the steps. I don't care how good your food plan is. Not about your food plan. Recovery lies in the steps. I hope you heard something tonight. If you did, it came from your higher power because I asked mine to put his words in my mouth to give you what you needed. Thanks for letting me share. My name is Ann B. My phone number is 718-570-4735. Again, that's 718-570-4735. I'm in Florida, so that is Eastern time in the U.S.